dope and IT. Oh, there we go. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Joint Committee on Marijuana Legalization to order. We're missing some of our colleagues here on the Senate side who are in caucus, and Senator Beyer, unfortunately, is under the weather and will not be here today. So I thought I'd go over the game plan for today and for the next week or so in this committee. There's been a lot of questions and a lot of interest in this issue. So we basically have two bills that have been on OLIS for quite some time with their amendments. House Bill 4014 will be considered today. We have an amendment, the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 4014 that has been worked and worked and worked long before the session, and is really represents a consensus. There is one issue that might need some elaboration, but we have consensus on the elements of this bill, which is basically a technical bill that also removes the residency requirements that we had in House Bill 3400. So I don't expect any other amendments to that bill to be successful today. But that doesn't mean that no amendments will be considered by this committee. We basically will have three bills that we're considering. The one, House Bill 4014, we need to get out today because we're running out of time before March 1st deadlines start to impact how people are going to relate to the recreational marijuana and the medical marijuana program. So we'll get that bill out today. And then we have another bill, Senate Bill 1511, that we will have a public hearing on amendments to that bill on Friday, but it will be a public hearing only. And then we will expect to act on that bill on Monday. Now this, Tuesday. Thank you, Senator Pazanski. So with that bill is also very necessary to get out as quickly as we can because people are making decisions and license applications right now, even as we speak. They need the certainty that we have in Senate Bill 1511 and in House Bill 4014 as soon as we can give it to them. So for Senate Bill 1511, unless there will be an amendment, the Dash 13 amendment that has been thoroughly vetted through our process, has been vetted for all different sides of the issue. It does not seem to have controversy still surrounding it. We've really worked out a lot of compromises in that amendment. There will be other amendments that probably will be proposed to Senate Bill 1511. What I've told people is if there's absolutely no controversy to your amendment and no opposition to your amendment, then it can go into 1511. If your amendment needs more work before it's ready for prime time, then you'll have another shot at getting the amendment in because I'm introducing a third bill which will contain there's an FBI fingerprint issue that OLCC presented to me. It'll contain that issue, but that bill will be open to amendments that people have that just might need more work. At the end of the day, this is the legislative process. You have to have the votes for your amendment, but there are some issues out there that are being worked on right now that are very important to people that are not going to be ready for prime time by Senate Bill 1511, and certainly not today. They will still be, if we can get the job done, if we can get the consensus and get the votes for those kinds of amendments, and I know of a couple of them that are out there, then the third Senate bill will be available for that purpose. I call it the Marijuana Committee Christmas Tree Bill. But still, again, I must emphasize that you still have to get the votes. This is still the legislative process. And this is how I feel comfortable with this process because we have a 35-day session. The work in this committee is some of the major work that will be done in this session. And I think if we do it in an orderly way, we can get absolutely the maximum amount of policy direction out in a short session. It's very difficult to accomplish that.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much for your explanation. I appreciate that, and I think it's a comprehensive explanation. I think all of us, and I'm referring to amendments that I have on this particular bill that we're looking at today, they are, for the most part, to protect the small growers that we've been hearing so much from. And I know you said there's probably no room for controversy in the remaining bills that we're looking at, but how about semi-controversial?
Yeah. Semi-controversy is good, Representative Wilson. This is the legislative process. We are a diverse state. We have all areas of the state represented on this committee. And at the end of the day, it depends on who can get the votes. And we need the votes here, and we need the votes that will pass both the Senate and House floors.
So if I may follow up, then it would be fair to say that if we pass this out without major opposition today, there is a fighting chance that my bills to protect my small Southern Oregon people, there's a good chance that we can hear those.
Absolutely. They will be given a fair hearing. But I want to point out to you that we already in the bill and the amendments, both bills and the amendments, we have taken steps to try to accommodate the small growers. The small growers have always been important to this committee. And so it's not like we haven't addressed that issue. And if you want to address it further, you will have an opportunity to do that.
I'll look forward to that. Thank you.
I do, too. Thank you. Senator Pisanski.
Madam Co-Chair, as we're going through this, I would be very appreciative as we go through and discuss what provisions we've actually put into these new potential base bills that are, in fact, going to be taking care of the concerns we've heard from the small farmers. Because my understanding is that there's still a couple of areas that are very, very significant that I'm not sure were actually addressed. Maybe they were, maybe I missed it because I have not gone through the Dash 13s yet. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I would greatly appreciate when we go through the 1411 threes that we point out where we may think we're taking care of addressing those issues as it pertains to the small medical farmers.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair.
I want to build on something that Representative Wilson just said. There is an exciting opportunity that a lot of us have been talking about that may help overcome some barriers that small growers have to coming into the OLCC-regulated system. And I think there's been a lot of creative teamwork done to try to find a path forward on that, and I look forward to trying to push that forward and support it and see if we can get that through, because I think it's important. I think it's a good idea, and there's a lot of merit to it. So I just want to let you know that that's on my list as a top priority also.
Duly noted. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, my memory is fading a little bit. Adam, what is the exposure? I know the Dash 3s have been on OLIS. But I think it would be beneficial for us to invite Mark Mayer up and just summarize again for us what is in the Dash 3s. And Mark, having heard Representative Wilson, perhaps you could, I think most of the small business, small grower things are in 1511, but to the extent that they do appear in here, if you could point those out. And while you're up there, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4014. I can't believe nobody caught me.
It's clever. Clever.
Welcome.
Chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I'll briefly discuss the changes between the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4014 and the Dash 3 amendments. The Dash 3 amendments are a complete gut and stuff like the Dash 1s, but for the most part, they are the same as the Dash 1s. There are a few differences, and I'll go through those really quickly. On page 2 of the amendment, in section 1, page 2 of the amendment, in the middle of the page where the boldface occurs, we have inserted some language directing the Oregon Liquor Control Commission as to how they are to assist small growers or small businesses that are being licensed by them. And this is in the grower statute. The specific language is, by minimizing barriers to entry into the regulated system and by expanding to the extent practicable transportation options that will support their access to the retail market. So we went ahead and added some direction to OLCC. Next change.
And if I can just break in, I have on my notes here that that amendment came at the suggestion of Representative Wilson. Are you looking at the one?
Oh, pardon me, Madam Chair. I was reading something else handed to me.
Oh, the amendment says that has your name on it in my notes. Assists the viability of marijuana producers that are independently owned and operated and that are limited in size and revenue with respect to other marijuana producers by minimizing barriers to entry into the regulated system and by expanding to the extent practicable transportation options that will support their access to the retail market. And Representative Buckley, I think you had something to do with that amendment as well. Okay, go ahead.
The next significant change between the dash threes and the dash ones, if you turn all the way to page 46 of the amendment, which I know for those of you who are scrolling on your computer, that might take a while. These are the provisions that relate to the tax provisions in the marijuana law. At the very top of page 46, there is some boldface, which is largely the same as it occurred in the dash one amendments. However, we have added a new series. So the current language reads, and this is the law that allows for state deductions related to marijuana businesses for taxpayers. Any federal deduction that the taxpayer would have been allowed for the production, processing, or sale of marijuana items authorized under 475B10 to 475B395, those are the recreational licensees, and those were in the dash ones, or 475B400 to 475B525, but for Section 280E of the Internal Revenue Code. And so what we did is we added references to the medical businesses as well so that they will also be able to claim tax deductions for businesses for business expenses on their state tax forms. And that is on page 46. And then the next most significant change between the dash threes and the dash ones, if you flip over to page 65. 64 and 65, these two pages deal with conditions of release and diversion. And if you remember the dash ones, we had language for probation and parole. We have now added language for diversion and for pretrial release. The language is the same in all instances, whether we're directing the counties or the courts to consider the conditions with respect to medical marijuana use. The language is always the same. It basically instructs the courts or the counties to impose the conditions in the same manner that they would impose conditions on prescription drugs. So it's not an outright allowance of medical marijuana, but what it does do is it provides specific direction that it is to be treated like a prescription drug and theoretically would create a cause of action for any medical marijuana cardholder who believed that they were being treated differently than a person who had a valid prescription. So that's what these four statutes do. I think it's also important to point out, just because of things I've been hearing in my office, that the diversion statute does not apply to DUII diversions. It is the base diversion statute for other crimes. So it's not for DUIs in this instance. It's for other crimes. So,
yeah, and if I could just break in here, there's been concern that it's been expressed to me that somehow this would tie the hands of probation officers or treatment facilities to limit or prohibit marijuana use by someone who might even be in there because of marijuana use. And it does nothing of the kind. They still have the same discretion they've always had. This amendment was presented by Senator Farioli, who might want to speak to it, because of situations that arose where blanket prohibitions were being issued rather than being determined on a case-by-case basis. So just think of oxycodone or OxyContin. If they can prevent someone from having OxyContin, they can certainly prevent someone from using medical marijuana.
That is correct, Chair.
Close enough. Okay.
Those are the major changes between the dash ones and the dash threes. Are there any questions, further questions about the dash threes?
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just noticing the language on the agreements with federally recognized Indian tribes. I know that was being brought forward, and I just want to note that this was the language that was agreed to. And
Madam Chair, if I may,
you may
respond. That is the language that has been agreed to after unnumbered vetting. You know, we really did do the best, I think, that we could to try to make sure that we approached this issue allowing each of the tribes to weigh in rather than accepting a version from one tribe, because they obviously do not speak for each other. They are separate sovereign nations. So the language that we have is language that's been thoroughly vetted. I will be reading in a statement of clarification, both in on the floor, but perhaps also if we take action in work session. It clarifies that tribes are sovereign nations, that the intention is not to seek license from the state, which they do not require, but to set up a situation where these sovereigns can coincide their regulatory structures so that they fit seamlessly together. And so it isn't a matter of the state of Oregon being in a subservient position to the nine treaty tribes, and certainly isn't a matter of the nine treaty tribes being in a subservient position to the state. This is a government-to-government agreement vetted by the tribes. The language is correct. We just have to be very clear about recognition of sovereignty in this issue.
Thank you
for the question.
Thank you.
Co-Chair
Leininger.
Thank you. I wanted to identify one other change I think was made since we last discussed 4014 in response to a good idea that I believe Representative Buckley brought forward, and that was that for veterans who need to use medical marijuana to treat a condition for which they've gotten physician approval, that it's an appropriate treatment, that the application fee for those veterans shall be no more than $20. Is that correct? I think we just found that.
Chair Leininger, Representative Buckley, that is correct. I'm sorry I skipped over that one. It's a very minor change in statute, so I guess I just missed it. But if you look on page 22 of the amendment, subsection 11, which is mainly light face.
Where are you?
Page 22 of the amendment, lines 10 to 16. Previously, if a veteran had PTSD, they could acquire their medical marijuana card for $20. We've lifted the language about having been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, so now all veterans will be able to acquire a registry identification card for $20. So.
And as I recall, that's the same fee that a health plan a participant pays, is that correct?
Correct, for veterans.
All right, great. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mark, I'm looking at sections 50 through 53, the diversion program portion. I know the Chair kind of touched on that a little bit ago. I guess, Mike, I just need some clarity concerning it, especially as it describes the issue for the person with an OMMP card. You know, cannot be restricted from using marijuana in a diversion or probationary or post-prison supervision program. So my concern is that just trying to describe, does this program, well, it appears right now to me anyways that there could be a lack of clarity to be used for undermining the treatment programs in DUI diversion. Do you kind of explain that or help me out with that?
Chairs Leininger and Burdick, Representative Olson, the language doesn't specifically address other programs and the effect that, and any effect on other programs, and there really is no potential effect, because what this language basically does, it doesn't touch other programs or how conditions are imposed on current prescription drugs at all. All it does is direct the decision maker, whether it's the county or the court or whoever it may be in these four instances, to think about whether or not they're imposing the conditions in the same manner that they would impose them for prescription drugs. And again, I think that the most likely effect of this is that it does give a cardholder a cause of action to say, this particular court treats medical marijuana differently than they do prescription drugs. And so that's what it does.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions from the committee? Well, I think we have the information we need. We've had this on OLIS for quite some time, and I think we have the information we need to adopt the Dash 3 amendment. So, Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 4014.
You know this.
Dated February 4th, 2016.
Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated February 4th, 2016 to House Bill 4014. Is there any discussion?
For the record, Madam Chair?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
If I may, I just want to add a brief footnote to our deliberations. There is a technical fix in the bill relating to the tribe's interests in this issue. The technical fix would recognize tribe sovereign policies regarding cannabis and provide a mechanism to coordinate regulatory and law enforcement policies in ways that will likely be unique to each of Oregon's nine tribes, where tribes have adopted the robust regulatory systems regulating and licensing cannabis businesses. This bill will allow the state to recognize those tribal licenses in the same manner as OLCC cannabis licenses are recognized for all purposes under state law, including state criminal law enforcement purposes. Madam Chair, I think that is language aimed at reinforcing the concept of tribal sovereignty. It also, to me, makes a direct statement. If the tribal governments are adhering to the Cole Memorandum and have a vigorous regulatory framework, then the state would be allowed to recognize that those licenses. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Farioli, and thank you for your hard work on this amendment. It's been through quite a vetting process, and I think it looks quite good, so thank you. Other Vice Chair Leininger.
Thank
Vice
you.
Chair Leininger.
Thank you. I wanted to thank and recognize some really great work that has gone into 4014 by Senator Prezonsky, Representative Olson, and Rob Bovet to try to find paths forward on how we treat violations and existing law to keep communities safe and make sure we're not over penalizing conduct that voters decided with Measure 91 would no longer be illegal. And I think they struck a great balance in trying to recognize the new status of legal marijuana and also keep communities safe and do things like prohibit smoking marijuana while you're driving a car, you know, very reasonable stuff like that. So thank you for your great work on that.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Prezanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 4011-3 has multiple parts to it. Some of it I'm very comfortable with. Others I'm very conscious of not addressing all the issues that I believe Representative Wilson will be bringing forward. I am concerned that based on what we have here in the Dash 3s, without having the other components to it, that the small family farms are in a very unusual situation of being potentially out of the market. And so I hope that we will continue our discussions as we go forward on this as to these other amendments that are very important to ensure that integrity that we talk about, because as much as I recognize what on page 2, lines 16 through 21, which is part of Section 1, does in fact give a perspective for OLCC to help with a transition of a grower into the REC and taking in various considerations. It does not address some of the underlying PIN potentials of allowing for what I thought we were trying to do, and what the voters said in 91 they did not want to see happen, was to basically turn the medical program upside down and interfere with it. And so without those other amendments, we will not have done our job.
Thank you. Other comments? Thank you. Committee, is there no discussion? Are there any objections to the Dash 3 amendment?
I think it's...
Without objection, the Dash 3 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I have a minor technical question for our learned counsel. On page 2, section D, line 20, where transportation occurs, and I was in the context of the discussion, as I heard the discussion, the word that occurred to me was transition. So I'm just wanting assurance that it wasn't to minimize barriers to entry into the regulated system, and by expanding to the extent practicable transition options that will support their access into the retail market. And I wondered how transportation, what is the context for transportation? Yes, please.
I'd be glad to answer that. When the testimony in our last meeting came up about some of the more rural providers or growers possibly not having the same access to someone who would be picking up their crop and delivering it to market outside of wholesale districts or wholesale licensed producers, to look for ways that there might be maybe a tiered licensier for a small transportation service that would provide to rural.
Madam Chair, if I could interject, I'm sure there's an uncomfortable phrase. You don't want to use delivery system in this context, but if transportation provides access for folks seeking medical products to be delivered, then that's the context in which I understood this.
Very good.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for clearing that up. All right. The Dash 3 amendment is adopted, and are we ready for a motion on the bill?
How about all these amendments that we talked about we're going to take in and actually consider on 40?
You're welcome to do that if you'd like to. In my comment, I think maybe were you here when I gave those comments?
I was here.
That we are going to keep the other bills open for amendments that don't have the support to go into 4014, but you're welcome to propose any amendments you wish.
Well, for procedurally, I guess I'll defer first to Representative Wilson. You said you also had some for 2014. Did you want to have yours be considered at this point, or do you want me to start?
After hearing the discussion from the chair, I feel that I've received assurances that are appropriate here, that the things that I think you and I are interested in can find their way into another bill.
Okay, but you're free to make a motion if you like, Senator Brzezinski.
Well, I think I need to preserve the record as to where we want to go, so we actually have a path of where people know where we want to go, even if it doesn't succeed today, knowing that we do not have a full Senate representation. And that is on the Dash 7s and the Dash 8s, so I'm not sure how the co-chairs want to handle this, if you want me to actually make a motion, or do you want to just have a discussion about what the context of those two amendments are without going through the formality of putting them up potentially for a vote?
I think a discussion would be the right tone to take, because it would be unfortunate to have a no vote on record for something that with a little work might...
No, I'm fine with that. I just wanted to make sure I was following protocol of the chairs before making a motion, because I would prefer doing it through a discussion myself.
That's right. So why don't you describe your amendments for us?
All right. So there are two amendments that I believe are up on OLIS from speaking to Adam. It's the dash sevens and the dash eights. And what these two amendments are there for is to ensure that we have an ability to have some type of oversight about the production of marijuana in this in our state. Colleagues, if you remember, throughout the 2015 session, we heard time and time again how much production is occurring in the state, and that it had been forecast and anticipated, and it had been evaluated and everything else, that we have somewhere between 3 to 5 times the amount that's necessary already being grown by medical growers, which are in the medical program of Oregon, and that amount would in fact take care of not only all of the medical needs but all of the recreational needs. So with that understanding, it seems appropriate to me that we do in fact retain in the requirements for production in the state a residency requirement. A residency requirement that we had put into the base bill, I believe it was 3,400, if I remember correctly, in 2015, that would in fact ensure that we weren't adding more product into a over saturated field as we have it today. So if we know right now that we have the already the production level that's greater than what we need for medical and recreational, I find myself questioning why are we wanting to enhance others to come into the state to be in direct competition with what a group of people were trying to bring into a system that they're not part of the system. The Cole memo says one of the things that we're supposed to do is not enhance and encourage diversion of product out of the state. And I would say to you that if we're going to be open-armed and allow for anyone to come in and start growing, not exclusively in the recreational area and potentially in their for their own use, you are in fact going to saturate the market that much more. You're going to drive the prices down in the state even further than they've already gone. We've already got testimony showing that. And so then the individuals that we're trying to incentivized to come into the program and become legal and not be diverting are going to have no other alternative in their perspective but to continue what they're doing, because there's going to be such a glut in the market that the pricing that they can get out of state versus in state is going to be, I think, a factor. And I also believe that we should also allow for our system that we're setting up now to have a couple of years of opportunity to actually be up and running to see how much more production we do need in this state. If, in fact, the estimates are correct, we will find that we should be taking steps that are going to regulate how much is actually being produced in the state. So the dash sevens will just basically leave in place what we had in 3,400 of having a residency exclusively on the production. That's it. Everything else, regulations goes off. That's what the dash threes does. I understand that's also right now what the dash threes provides, that the residency requirement is going off of the production side as well. The other part that we heard through this testimony during 3,400 is addressed by the dash eights, and it's basically building off the dash sevens, where you would leave in place the residency requirement for the a two-year residency requirement and maintaining the sunset that's to run in 2020. So basically you're talking 3.5 years out, that you could in fact set up a vertical integrated system for those individuals. If we really think we need to or want to have new growers coming into the market, that they could grow for their own use in their own businesses and not be saturating into the other areas of the general commerce that we currently have. I've heard some of the proponents for like the dash threes and others that we have an issue with the dormancy clause as well as the interstate commerce clause. I've not convinced at this point that we do have a problem, but if we do, If we do have a problem, it would probably be on the dormancy clause. And I would submit to you that having the dash 8 that does, in fact, allow for those individuals coming in from out of state to set up and allow them to grow for their own operations and not be able to saturate the market would, in fact, take care of whatever concern there may be if there is a concern with that. If I remember correctly from council, at least on the interstate commerce, we did not see a problem there. I think it's important, again, that we take measured steps and not basically throw out the incentives that we are trying to build in for the growers that are here today who may, in fact, be diverting product out of the state. And to me, this is an opportunity that will, in fact, secure and give us more information over a two-year period to see exactly how the production levels are actually working, whether or not we're having the impact that we want and bringing people forward. And it will, in fact, under these proposals, still allow those who are growing within the state under the medical program to actually be able to sell their product into these, I'm going to call it closed retail markets that the non-resident growers would be having. And that's another incentive to have our growers that we're trying to get into the system to have another mechanism means. The last part to this is that I am still not convinced that when you have new people coming in that are looking at how can I make my buck now, not tomorrow, and not really having the best interest of the patient, that they're going to be looking at growing and producing what they think is going to bring them the top dollar. So that means that you could potentially inadvertently, unintended consequence, have growers that are currently able to grow and are growing strains for patients to be adversely impacted to the point where they may be no longer able to provide that medicine to those particular patients. And to me, knowing what the basis of 91 was and how we heard from the initiative individuals as well as from the comments that do no harm to the medical program as we bring on a recreational program. And so I'm asking, Mike, all of you to please think about what we say we want it to do and how we want it to protect the medical program. And I believe this is will give us the assurance of that, which the dash 7 or, as I said, the dash 8. It gives out a mechanism for those who, if we really think we need to take care of and accommodate new growers coming in the state that already has 3 to 5 times what's already needed to be grown, we can do that. But we're not going to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We'll ensure that those patients that have contacts and direct relationships with their growers, that those growers will be able to have the opportunity to still compete in this new world market.
Thank you, Senator Pruzanski. Other Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I strongly support the dash 7s and dash 8s for the very reasons Senator Pruzanski has set out. I think that all the work done, I think great work done to develop the co-location on the retail side gives me some assurance that I think we're doing the right thing in dropping the residency requirement for retail and for other parts of the industry. But I fully agree with Senator Pruzanski that unless we take a very, very slow approach to the amount of marijuana grown and how it is put into the system, we do run the risk of damaging patients. And I think that we all on this committee have a commitment to make sure we're taking care of patients. And just to note the kind of scale of what we're talking about, in the Eugene Register Guard, which apparently is a newspaper in Lane County, they had a story today about the Girl Scouts. I don't know if you saw any of you saw the story about that. But the Girl Scouts cookie drive is coming up, and traditionally they have rented warehouse space in Eugene to store the large shipment of cookies that they come in and they distribute from the warehouse. They cannot find warehouse space in Eugene because warehouse space has been bought up by the industry. And it's in the article, and commercial real estate brokers quoted by saying, we can't find a space for them because prospective marijuana industry indoor growers are buying or are leasing that space up. So that's the scale, I think, of people coming into our state in order to, as Senator Pruzanski said, make a quick profit. And that is my concern. I think our priority should be the patients of the medical marijuana program, not the opportunities for out-of-state growers to make a quick profit in the state of Oregon. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Along the same theme, My greatest concern has been my small outdoor growers in southern Oregon. The idea that we want to preserve the relationship between these growers and these patients and the ability for the growers to stay in business. And that's my main concern, that they're not able or will not be able in certain scenarios to continue what they're doing. I want to defer for just a moment, if I might, to Representative Helm, if the chair agrees, because part of what we want to talk about involves the land use compatibility statement. And if we could defer for a moment to the expert in that category, Representative Helm.
You know, what I would suggest, if we could keep the discussion limited to the amendments that we have, and then we're going to talk about the amendments to 1511, because I wanted to get that description in today, and then perhaps that would be a more timely discussion, a broader discussion in that context.
Right. I just simply wanted to address my dash 6 amendments to 4014 that we just bypassed.
Oh, well, please.
Okay.
Agree.
If you wouldn't mind, then, I'd like to defer to Representative Helm just to explain the locks.
Okay. Would you please explain Representative Wilson's amendments?
Thank you, both co-chairs. Thank you very much for having this discussion period. I appreciate it. I think it's useful. What I thought could add to the discussion today is an explanation of what waiving the lux might look like on the ground, because it's a fairly limited idea within the rulemaking authority that we're considering giving OLCC to do the small canopy work that they've been talking about. What waiving the lux would do would allow the growers that are in place right now that have a good record to keep moving along doing what they're doing under the regime that they're doing it under, and not have to change simply because the land use laws change as a result of the other work that we've been doing. What it does not mean, though, is that over time those folks that may get the OLCC license for the small canopies and do come into the system would be exempt from the land use laws. For example, if they were violating a critical land use law and annoying their neighbors, which is what Representative Wilson has been concerned about all the time, they would still be subject to the county's code enforcement authority. And the county would have the opportunity to go out and say, ho, you know, you're doing X, Y, and Z wrong, and unless you fix that, you're going to be in violation. We're going to have to be out here and we're going to have to be penalizing you. That's fair enough. That's the same rules that every landowner operates in a rural area. And I have faith that the small growers can deal with that and do it right, and they'll be treated the same as other landowners. So I thank you for that chance to clarify.
Well, and thank you for that explanation. It's a good opportunity to kind of highlight how this committee has done a lot of its work, and that is collaboration with all the different interests. And I understand you're working closely with Mr. Bovet from the Association of Oregon Counties to make sure that we can accomplish the goals that you're talking about within the interests of the other residents of the county. And so I commend you for your hard work on that, and I commend Mr. Bovet, wherever he is back there. There he is. On your efforts to reach a pathway on that. And I hope we can get there by the end of this very short session. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Wilson.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could finish talking about my dash sixes, and I appreciate Representative Helm for giving us the background on the lux. Part of what the dash sixes would do here is waive the lux, as you might have gathered from the discussion, but it would apply to people who've been in place before January 1st, 2015. So it is narrowly crafted. The applicant is applying for a mature marijuana plant grow canopy that's no larger than 10,000 feet. The other part of the dash six is what I call the anti-cynicism section. And this is one that might gather attention of certain attorneys in the room. It states in part, if a city or a county adopts an ordinance that specifically applies to marijuana grow sites or it has as its intent a significant decrease in the size or operations of marijuana grow sites. Those ordinances do not apply to any address where a marijuana grow site is located if each person is basically in good standing. And this is crafted for those who were in place before January 1st, 2015.
Thank you for that explanation. Senator Pruzanski.
Yeah, following with Representative Wilson's amendment in the dash six, again, I think this is pretty imperative because we've actually heard, and it's on, my understanding on record in some counties, that they are intentionally trying to put in these new land use rules with the sole purpose of destroying these individual small farms, and such as the type of zoning that's in place because of how the configuration of the lots are for those zones. It will, in fact, with the setbacks of 250 feet in some cases, completely take the operation that has been going well, has not had the problems that we've heard, and because they've been in existence for 10 plus years. And this is something that the voters never intended to see that occur. I don't think anyone in this committee, when we worked through 3400 and all the other bills, ever anticipated that this was going to be some type of a back door that then the counties where you may have some individuals who don't like the commodity, don't care for the industry, are going to try to shut it down and basically, again, have direct impact on patients. And you know, again, you're going to stop some of them because some of them are going to abide by the law, but clearly others are going to do what they need to do to make ends meet. And I think if we're really wanting to incentivize and get people to come into the system and get out of the dark and not to diverting stuff, we need to at least allow those who have been in good operators, who've been in existence, as we've heard, prior to 1/1/15, to be able to have this smooth glide into that next step, as compared to being told your endeavors, your occupation is no longer welcome in this county, and because of some new land use laws, you're shut down. And that is what I think all of us hopefully are trying to maintain, that there's got to be some reasonableness here. There shouldn't be some type of reefer madness concern, especially for a part of the industry that's been in place for 10 to 15 years as compared to maybe some of these, I hate to say, I don't want to get sexual here as Johnny, but Johnny or Janie come lately, who's basically coming in trying to just get in there and make a quick buck and move on to the next state. I mean, you look at who's coming into our state, who wants to come in our state now, where are they at right now? They're in the other states that actually have already had legalization. So I understand market share, I understand how you want to position yourself, but I think we have a job to do to ensure that we're taking care of what's right for Oregon, what's right for our citizens and our patients within this state.
Thank you. Chair Leininger.
Thank you. Well, I am really interested in and excited about trying to support us getting to a point where we can pass language that would enable small growers to come into the OLCC-regulated system in a way that's fair and reasonable, and I think that we're on a good path. I would say as to the residency issue, you know, there are people in this room, there are people on this panel who didn't grow up in Oregon, and they are full-fledged Oregonians, and people who may not have lived in Oregon for 2 years, by my book, can be full-fledged Oregonians, and I would hate to see Oregon, I would hate to see this committee take a position that you're not a real Oregonian for the purposes of participating in a legal sector if you haven't been here for the prior 2 years. You know, my family's been in Oregon for a long time, and the Oregon that I believe in is one in which we're all equal. You know, when we're here and we're trying to do something legal, we're all equal. And I think it's not every day that I get to be the voice of unfettered capitalism vis-a-vis my peers, but I do think it's one thing to give small businesses and medium-sized businesses and large businesses all a fair shot to compete in the meritocracy of this new industry. And it's another thing to protect and close the doors on competition in this sector uniquely, when in all other sectors, you know, people get to compete for who's good, who can retain a market share, who can do the business well. I think we would position ourselves well to welcome people who want to run legal businesses and who can pass our background checks and who can follow the rules to do this legal business in Oregon, whether you're new or kind of new or your family's been here for a lot of generations. And I think at the same time, there's room for us to try to assist small businesses in legal ways to find a way forward and compete on their merit like others need to, too. So that's my perspective, and I like what we have done with the residency requirements in the Dash 3s.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, in response to our good co-chair's comments, certainly we're all equal, but some are more equal than others in this process. But I'm very interested in a full airing of the amendments that we've heard discussed here today, because these issues are not easily resolved. They're extremely complicated. We have over 65 jurisdictions that have opted out of all six licensing categories. Several, a handful have referred these questions to local voters. I've been visited in my office, as you all undoubtedly have in your offices, by folks who are simply unwilling to accept the result of the vote on Measure 91. Just don't want to accept it. Others who really are upset about the whole right to farm concept being applied to marijuana. Still others are concerned deeply that established businesses that have been operating in Oregon for a dozen years or so might be the object of discrimination by a few pesky locally elected officials. And every one of the proponents of every one of those positions has a right to be heard, and their perspective is legitimate. Doesn't matter where they're coming from. It may be driven by the fact that the dream home that they decided to build on an acreage on the bucolic slopes of iconic Mount Hood now overlook a significant gross operation, which wasn't there when they started construction on their dream home, but certainly is a feature of the landscape now. You can empathize with the person who finds themselves in that circumstance. Our job is to choose wisely and to balance equities. These are complicated issues and deserve to be well vetted. It's going to take more discussion, I believe, to consider the amendments that we just heard discussed. I'm willing to engage, and I want to understand what the best path forward is so that we can get there together. So I don't know that the chairman will accept these amendments on 4014, but I've heard the chair say that we'll have these discussions before we leave this building. So I'm confident that that's going to happen, and I'm anxious that we have those discussions. These are real problems. They need real solutions, and we all have constituencies to answer to on those very issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Pazanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And this is really, I guess, a question for clarification for Co-Chair Langinger. In your statements regarding your position on the Dash 3s, you made reference to the what I would call into the OLCC recreational program. My comments are on not just that, but the medical program, where you have growers that are here, have been in existence for 10 to 15 years, that are maybe not wanting to go that way. But because of a change in the local land use laws, is going to put them at a complete disadvantage. They don't have the ability to go out and buy new property that's going to fit potentially these new rules, and where you could have someone coming in from out of state that has the capital to buy mass land holdings to do this. So I'm hoping that as we go through this, that we're not going to sectionalize out the existing medical growers who apparently are the ones that are already providing this state with enough product to the point of where we run them out of business through a back door of how some counties have chosen to
time, place, and manner
deal with this on their definition of what is reasonable time, place, and manner.
Sure.
And you know, it just seems to me that we would be neglecting our obligations and duties to the voters who passed 91 about trying to preserve and maintaining the medical program to the benefit of others.
Thank you. This has been a great discussion, and work is going to be continuing. For people who have amendments like this, my door is open to advise and on what might be the best pathway forward, whether resolution can be reached in time for the other bill, 1511, I always transpose, which we do need to get out next Tuesday, whether it can be done in time for that or whether it's wiser to give it a little more time and wait for the third bill. But my commitment is to work diligently on this, and I know there are people out there in the audience who are also committed to really putting their shoulder to the wheel to try to address some of these issues. We're making a trail through 6 feet of powder on this. So our work is, it's not easy, but I think we have the right team signed up for it. So with that, we have an amended House Bill 4014 on the floor. Senator Farrelly, do you have a motion?
I do, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 4014 is amended. Be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved House Bill 4014 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Not exactly the House floor, Madam Chair.
It will have to go to the House
floor. Oh, House first?
Yes.
Oh, okay. It's a House floor. I amend my motion.
It's a House bill. Is there any further discussion? Representative Buckley.
Hey, Madam Chair. Senator Farrelly, if you would like me to read a statement about the tribal piece of the bill on the House floor, I'd be glad to do so.
Thanks, and I'll provide that, Madam Chair. And I will be most delighted to hear the bill read in the Senate twice by title and once in the entirety. Oh,
don't
Thank you,
you
Madam
dare.
Chair.
Don't you dare.
That's the Constitution.
All right, that's a discussion for future times. Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion? Let's take the roll on this one. Excused.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Farrelly.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Posansky.
Aye.
Co-Chair Burdick.
Aye.
Co-Chair Leininger.
Aye.
The motion has passed.
Madam Chair.
We will, just a second, we will have Representative Leininger signed up as carrier. You can decide whether you want to have a co-carrier or pass it on.
Thanks.
But right now, we'll put you down as carrier. Senator Posansky.
Thank you for a vote explanation. I supported the motion to move the 4014 as amended with the dash threes to the floors based on some of the provisions in there that I feel are very important, and also on the assurances from the co-chairs that we will be able to address these or look at addressing these other issues that are very vital to maintaining these small independent family farms.
Thank you. And I really want to commend the committee. A lot of hard work has gone into this, but I particularly want to commend my co-chair, Leininger. I've had other responsibilities in the last few months. I have not carried my weight. She has carried her weight. She's carried my weight. She's carried all your weight and then some. And I just want to recognize her incredibly hard work on this. And we have a unanimous vote. Thanks to you. All right. Now we will move on. We're still in work session, but we will move on to a description of Senate Bill 1511, the dash 13 amendments. Mr. Mayor.
Co-chairs Leininger and Burdick, members of the committee, Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel, once again, to walk through the Dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 1511. These are loosely based on the previous Gutten stuff, which I can't quite remember the dash on that. I apologize. And not a lot has changed with respect to some of the provisions. There's been some tweaking of that existing language. However, there has been quite a few new provisions added, so I'll just walk through this really quickly. The first part of this bill, which is the major part, commonly referred to as the expanded access part, allowing stores licensed by the OLCC to engage in the distribution of medical products. That piece has remained largely unchanged, with the exception of some additional rulemaking power by the commission, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, which is outlined on page 4 of the amendment with regard to producers who choose to engage in the production of medical product. If you remember correctly, producers who choose to register as engaging in medical product, they'll be able to sell some of their product. They'll be able to produce some of their product for patients and then take excess of that and sell it into the market. There was a request to add some additional rulemaking power. That is on page 4, lines 11 to 22. I won't go through those specifically, but that's the additional rulemaking power. And that's basically the only thing that's changed since the last version. The next major portion of this bill, which begins on page, excuse me.
Mark, I'm sorry to interrupt real briefly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you might find the Dash 13s under the meeting materials notice of OLIS. Because we are not technically under work session for this bill, we can't actually amend the bill just as a quirk of OLIS. All of the amendments to Senate Bill 1511 are going to be under the meeting materials tab. Apologies, Mark.
Thank you. And while we're on that subject, the plan, just to remind you, is to have a hearing on these amendments and any other amendments that people have for 1511 on Friday. But again, we will be in work session for that meeting, but that no action will be taken. It will just be for the purposes of a public hearing. So continue on.
The second portion of the Gutten Stuff Amendment, the tax relief section for a patient card holder so they can buy from recreational stores tax-free, has remained unchanged. Page 27 is the next portion of this amendment. Section 27 is stay on possession limits for persons applying to be licensed by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. That language has remained largely unchanged from the last Gutten Stuff Amendment as well. Real briefly, I want to describe this to set it apart from the next set of amendments that we'll look at. What this does is it allows medical growers and medical growers who plan on getting a license from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to maintain their level, their current plant level limits, as opposed to those that are set in statute, the cap, if they begin the process of acquiring a license from the Liquor Control Commission. So if they get a license, there's two avenues here. One is if they fill out their application completely and pay their application fee. Then the other one is if they're in a county that's imposed a moratorium, which would prevent them from getting a land use compatibility statement, then they can fill out their application with the exception of the LUX and pay their application fee. And so those are the two ways that they can proceed forward. And it'll put a stay on that for a period of a year.
If I can interrupt you here, there's been a lot of confusion around this provision. So what is their deadline for applying for their for getting their application in under both systems? What is their deadline to qualify for this stay?
I'm not sure if you guys are going to want to change this a little bit. The way that the one for applicants moving into the Liquor Control Commission is currently written, they have to fulfill their duties in applying and getting all their all the other growers who are located at that address and all their patients lined up by April 1st, so basically a month. The next provision actually has a more extended period, which I'll discuss when I get there. So okay. Roughly from the time that this passes, which I would assume would be around March 1st till April 1st, they'll have the ability to file their application, pay their application fee, and then the other onus on the growers is that they have to get all the growers who are at the address to agree that this is what they want to do, and they have to get their patient cardholders to sign a statement that basically says, if you have any of my product at the time that you acquire your license, ownership transfers over to you. That does not mean that the product is going to be taken away from the patient cardholders, but what it does mean is that the patients are notified and aware that they have to go get their product from the licensee if they want to retain their possessory right to it before the license is issued. So, and they have to get all that information in a month.
Okay. One of the confusions was that it's the plant limits that we had in place for grandfather purposes applies only to the medical population and not to the people who are transitioning to OLCC. So if somebody theoretically has 400 plants, they're not subject to the same kind of limitations that the medical only are, the 48 versus 96.
Correct. This allows you to maintain your plant limit cap as of the effective date of this act. So whatever your plant limits are on the effective date of this act, as long as you have all your information into OLCC and the Oregon Health Authority by April 1st, you'll be able to maintain that limit. And the idea is that theoretically you should be able to meet their canopy size given whatever product you have on hand.
Correct. Okay, thanks for clearing that up. Representative Buckley.
Just a question along those lines. It seems to be a challenge to be able to get that kind of agreement from patients, et cetera, in a short period of time. Are the co-chairs open to discussion of, at least from OLCC or from the growers, whether 1 month is going to be a time that's actually workable to accomplish what needs to be accomplished under this statute?
You know, I just learned about this particular part of the requirement a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little perplexed to hear about it. I think the intent is to have only those people who are seriously moving into the recreational market eligible for the stay. And so I would certainly, we can talk about it, how we would do this legally, but if there's a way to have the application complete and have a little more time to get the necessary permissions, I think that would definitely make sense. What we're trying to do is not just have people say, oh, I'm going to get a license so I get to keep my 400 plants another year, but really get those people who are seriously moving into the recreational market.
The next section, which begins on page 30, is a stay on the plant limit cap for those growers who want to stay in the medical system. So these two provisions are different. And if you read through this one, it only applies to those sites that are trying to get affirmation that they meet the criteria for the increased plant bump if all the growers were present at the address prior to January 1st, 2015, which was the criteria that you could maintain 96 plants instead of 48 in a non-residential area or 24 instead of 12 in a residential area. And so this creates a stay for them to basically and the Oregon Health Authority to work through whether or not they meet the criteria you guys put into statute last session to make sure that everybody has a chance to verify that they meet the criteria for staying at those larger limits. It does not allow you to stay at a limit higher than 96. In order to stay higher than 96, you'd have to apply for the OLCC license. This stay lasts until May 1st.
Okay, if we can backtrack for a minute, I just got a request from an unidentified committee member to clarify that the people who are applying for the OLCC stay do not have to have a particular time by which their plants must have been planted. There's been confusion around this. In other words, if somebody had, they planted 400 plants, 5 months ago, and they want to move into the OLCC system, they can still do that if they're going into the OLCC system.
That is correct. There's no contingency on when you planted in this.
The planting deadline was only for purposes of the grandfather clause of the medical-only system.
Correct. There's nothing specifically in here that says that you have to meet the plant canopy requirement established by OLCC by rule, but, you know, that would apply most, you know, that would effectively apply.
Yeah, and I think people understand that when they apply for the license, they're going to be limited to what the canopy requirement is. There was confusion about whether there was some confusion as between the recreational and the medical. So I think, I don't know where this note came from, but if anybody is still confused, please raise your hand and I'll go over it again. All right, thank you.
So hopefully I sorted out those two stay provisions. They're pretty complicated. If anybody wants to talk to me about them, feel free to come down and discuss them with me. The next provision that we've added is on page 31, distance requirements. And this was an idea that was proposed in another amendment, which is that if there is some sort of physical barrier or other geographic entity that kind of cuts off a dispensary or a recreational store from a school facility, that a city or county can shrink the 1,000-foot rule down to 500. So this gives some leeway in allowing there to be less of a foot constraint on between dispensaries and schools or rec stores and schools if that criteria is met. Real briefly, the last piece in here, page 36, marijuana abuse prevention is a very small fix. Just to do some technical cleanup to the marijuana abuse prevention program that passed out of committee and was enacted into law by the Legislative Assembly last year. I did skip over the early start provision. What was in the Dash 6 amendments was adopted and put into this gut and stuff, which is to take out the specific language regarding what type of extracts could be sold in early start, and instead it now says a receptacle containing extracts, so that it's more widely applicable, although those would still be subject to public health and safety rules adopted by the health authority. So, and that's 1511, unless there's other questions.
Thank you. I think, committee, in terms of logistics, I think we need to find out very, very quickly if there are problems with things that are in this amendment so that we can get those resolved in time to move this bill on Tuesday. Representative Buckley.
Hey, Mango, just that provision we were talking about to clarify that transition into the timeline.
Correct.
Applying for those licenses. Yeah. That's the only one I can do.
We'll discuss that. Like I say, this was news to me. I don't know if it was news to others.
Chair Burdick, that was an LC arbitrary date that we just dumped in there because we didn't have direction. So.
Yeah, and I don't think this committee has a problem with the April date. It's just the logistics. If you've got 100 cardholders, just the logistics of getting all those signatures could be a problem. So. Mm-hmm. Maybe if the committee's comfortable, I could work with Mr. Mayor and see if we can get a solution to this. Okay. Other questions on his presentation? All right.
So, Madam Chair, there are others, potential amendments for 1511. Did you want those to be mentioned today?
Or? You know, I think that would be very good. I wanted to make sure we got through this, but we've got time to go through the other ones as well. So, and since, especially since you won't be here on Friday, that would be great if you could describe your amendments as well.
Madam Chair, there were a couple of different individuals that came to me wanting to have some discussions. One of them is 1511-4. I'm not sure, but I believe it's up on OLIS from what Adam had said earlier.
Yes.
This is one that basically would allow for modification of the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act, and I've made a request for the sponsor of that measure, or requester, I should say, of that measure, to be here to explain for them, and I would assume that Harrison Conley will be here with or without his client on that issue. The dash sevens on the 1511 is one that I requested based on what I believe this committee had done under the decisions we made with 3400 as to allowing for the siting of a medical facility in directly next to a recreational facility without having any distance between it. I know we've had some other discussions since then regarding co-locating facilities, but the 1511-7 is really an opportunity for us to, if we meant what we said during the discussions on 3400, to tell local governments that they cannot have other distance requirements between those that we said that could be side by side. And I do know of one community, Portland, who was approached by some advocates who do, I think they've adopted, or if not, they're in the process of adopting, or were in the process of adopting an ordinance that was going to put a ban of 1,000 feet between any of these type of businesses. So you would, in fact, have a prohibition under the city ordinance that was not intended by the state, at least in this committee, when we talked about having the ability to have side-by-side rec and medical. Now my understanding is, in, at least in Portland, the proposal, if it's not adopted already, is to basically maintain a 1,000-foot barrier from any facilities, whether they are the same rec-to-rec or medical-to-medical, and the one that I thought that we were prohibiting from not prohibiting medical and rec is also being banned in that community by 1,000 feet. And so I would like to have that one reconsidered, because if we meant what we said in on the discussions on 3400, then we know at least one entity, governmental unit, has basically gone in a different direction.
Senator Brzezinski, could I ask you on this, because when we, the statute, and we know what we intended to allow the latitude for them to be next door. But does your amendment require them? I'm just unclear. Do you just make sure that they understand that they have the option to locate them next to each other? But it doesn't require them to, does it?
It doesn't require them to do it, but when you put a prohibition saying they can't be within 1,000 feet of each other, you're prohibiting that from occurring. So.
That's the rub on this one, is that, you know, one of them is, you know, the 1,000-foot rule says they have to be at least 1,000 feet. And so a city, you know, within that can say 1,500 or whatever. So it says at least 1,000 feet. So the problem is,
maybe there was a drafting error, but I thought that based on the intent of this committee, we were trying to ensure that you could have them side by side,
right,
and they weren't going to be outright prohibited,
correct,
by city ordinance.
But that's different than requiring, than overruling an ordinance that makes that decision. I guess that's the difficulty. So I would encourage you to work with the city people or the local government people and see if you can get a solution to that. Because if we basically preempt ordinances that have more space, that a city might decide, you know, to have 1,500 feet, if we preempt anything that's greater than 1,000, I think we could run into trouble. So, anyway, that's just a flag on this amendment. Do you have others here?
The other one we had, went into the new amendments. I'm not going to go over that. The last one, my understanding was that there was advocates who wanted on the dash nines to allow for those who are on work release programs to be able to have access to medical marijuana if it was prescribed or authorized by a doctor, and treating it as a medicine under our configuration as a Schedule II drug, just like work release programs, if they can't prohibit other type of pharmaceuticals. So, in your example, if they could, in fact, say you cannot be on a work release program, because you're prescribed oxycodone, that's one thing, because then you're being treated the same. But if it's only because you're using medical marijuana as compared to anyone using any pharmaceuticals, and they're not banned from being on work release, they should also have that same right to be on work release as anyone else who is using a pharmaceutical prescribed drug.
Okay. All right. Is that it for yours?
That's what I have at this point.
Okay. And then I see some other amendments here. I see Representative Buckley.
Well, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think Representative Olson actually might have it's the dash 14, the one we discussed last week about the lotions and.
Oh, lotions.
Yeah,
yes.
I just want to make sure the committee is aware of that is there. And I don't know if Representative Olson wants to.
I don't have dash 14, sorry.
He's going to take it on my word. This is his amendment that we put in.
It says Representative Hill, I believe.
It says Rep. Buckley.
No, wait, where are we?
Yes, it's a...
Oh, the 14th. I'm sorry, I was one up here.
And, Madam Cooker, just for the record, we are working in my office. We're going to have a couple different amendments. I'm not sure for this bill or the third bill, but one would be a request for proposal on a research project on medical marijuana. That's been the task force that's come up with several different ideas. And the other one would be on the development of a nonprofit dispensary idea where we could have low-income patients access to medicine.
Okay, that's great. The dash 14 does not appear to be on OLIS. You could make sure.
Right here, it's
it's on OLIS
it's
now.
It's posted 2/8/16, and it's
okay. All right, my folder is just one day behind. So, okay. So anybody who does have amendments, make sure they get on OLIS so people have a chance to see them before they get to the hearing.
And Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, as we are hearing, this is a public hearing on Friday. All of these amendments that are currently under meeting materials will actually be in their proper place as of Friday as amendments to Senate Bill 1511.
Okay. And again, committee, I encourage you to consult with me and my co-chair here about what's the best pathway forward to amendments based on how much work they need to get across the finish line.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Wilson.
If I might just add, the amendments that I have for 1511 roughly reflect what I had for 4014.
Excuse me, would you repeat that again?
Yeah, the amendments that I'm proposing for 1511 reflect the amendments that I proposed in 4014.
Thank you for that explanation. Okay. That saves us some time. You don't have to repeat everything you said.
Right.
All right. Any other business in the committee? Good job, committee. We are adjourned.
I was so tempted to blame Adam for any confusion.